Before doing so, I just want to dedicate this morning's shir Le'ilui Nishmas HaChaver Shlomo Michael Ben Meir Alav HaShalom. That is Mrs. Ann Strauss has dedicated today's shir in memory of her late husband, Mr. Michael S. Strauss. And we thank you for being so thoughtful and so kind. And we hope that his neshama will have an aliyah from our Divrei Torah. If only you knew how many Divrei Torah across the world were shared Le'ilui Nishmaso, it's quite a humbling privilege that your family has. So I thank you, and I thank all of you for joining us and for participating. And Amir Tashem, our Divrei Torah, will be Le'ilui HaNeshama for him. Last week we talked a little bit about some of our thoughts and feelings about Eretz Yisrael. I got a lot of feedback on that shiur, and there was a discussion about continuing some of those conversations. So what we're going to talk about today is a little bit of a continuation, but something really touching on a shaila that I've been asked many, many times, and particularly in this time of the year, I'm asked it, and you'll understand why. The question becomes, as we know next year, as some of you may not yet know, next year is going to be Shemitah. And Shemitah is a very challenging year. It's a great opportunity in Eretz Yisrael, but it's a very difficult one, and it's very, very challenging to figure out how to handle Shemitah and all the different hashgachas in Eretz Yisrael. Hashgacha is a very hot topic in this community these days. Anyone who wants to talk about it, we should talk about it and clarify what's going on. But I will tell you that I'm $7,000 in the hole, paying for my friends to be defended in Beis Din, and I gave them a personal check yesterday, so I guess it's money well spent, but it's totally insane what's going on here. Either way, yes, we've been in meetings every night till 1 o'clock in the morning discussing this. But whatever it is, we will leave that for now. Hashgachas are complicated everywhere. And certainly when it comes to Shemitah, it's hard to figure out how to do it properly. And one of the things that's complicated is, as we know, you're not allowed to do work on the land during the year of Shemitah. So what happens then? You don't do any work, so how's a farmer supposed to live? How are people supposed to eat? What are they going to eat? Do we have stockpiles from years before? So this is always very, very complicated, and some people believe in the Heter Mechira, and some people say you're not allowed to do a Heter Mechira, how can you sell the land of Eretz Yisrael? All kinds of very complicated issues, but something that you will see in the newspapers in the coming weeks and months is great opportunity for those living in Chutz La'aretz, and they will try and get all of us to participate in this wonderful opportunity, which is to participate in the mitzvah of Shemitah by buying a piece of land in Eretz Yisrael and being a farmer who does not work his or her field during Shemitah. And they write about this, that this is an amazing opportunity for those living in Chutz La'aretz to participate in the mitzvah of Shemitah. And the question is that even legitimate? Does that even work? Would I be able to, you know, send $500 to some farmer in Israel, tell him I want to buy a little square corner of his field, and by doing so, I now have the ability to consider myself one of the Shomrei HaShemitah? So that's a very interesting question. That's what we're going to get to. But before we get into that, let us just finish off some of the issues that we started talking about last week. Moshe Rabbeinu, as we know, is referred to as Adon HaNaviim. He is the greatest of all leaders. He is the greatest of all people who ever lived. Lo kam b'Yisrael k'moshe od. The Gemara tells us, based on that, a interesting point. But as we understand it, lo kam b'Yisrael k'moshe od means there never was and there never will be another Jew who lives in the world who is as great as Moshe. What's strange in the Gemara is b'Yisrael lo kam. The Gemara says in the Jewish community there was no one like Moshe, but in the Umas HaOlam there was somebody who was comparable to Moshe. Really? How can that be? Who was comparable to Moshe? Well, none other than Bilam HaRasha. And that's a very strange comment. We need to have a whole nother shiur about that. Not for today at all, but Moshe Rabbeinu was assumed to be the greatest Jew that ever lived. And that's what the Rambam writes as one of the Yud Gimel Ikari HaEmunah. We have to believe that Moshe Rabbeinu had a level of Nevuah that no other person had ever had before, and no other person will ever have future, and that is why Moshe Rabbeinu was so central to us. And therefore, we have a very fascinating Gemara Maseches Pesachim, which should probably catch our attention. It's a amusing Gemara, if you really want to know the truth. So the Gemara says, Li'asid level, in the end of days, there's going to be a Su'uda LaTzadikim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it says, the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to make a Gala feast, a Gala banquet, where everybody's going to come together. All of the noble, virtuous people from all the generations are going to gather. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to serve this meal. I don't know exactly what it means, but it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take all the devout Jews from all the generations and gather them all in a room together, and he's going to serve a meal. What's going to be served there? I don't know. But the Gemara then says, La'achar she'ochlim v'shosim. After they sit together and they all feast and they all have this great celebration, so the Gemara says, everybody's going to turn to each other and say, well, now it's time for Birchas HaMazon. We've enjoyed this meal so much, now we have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Gemara says, they look around the room and they say, hey, we have 10 men, so we have to make a mezumin. Well, we make a mezumin, generally what we do is, we single out the most important person in the room to be the one to lead the benching. Well, the problem is, of those 10 men who are going to be there, and I assume there will be hundreds of men and thousands of women, I don't know who's going to be there, but of the 10 men that will be there, everybody is considered to be a great person, because this is a su'uda la tzaddikim. This is a gathering of only righteous and devout individuals. So the Gemara says, everybody looks around, and they're trying to figure out who should be the one to bench. So Avram looks at Yitzchak, Yitzchak looks at Yaakov, Yaakov looks at David HaMelech. Everybody's looking at each other, and Rabbi Yosef Karo is looking at the Ramah, and Rabbi Kiva Eger is looking at the Menchas Chinuch, and everyone's trying to figure out who's going to bench. It's a major problem. Until everybody says, hey, how foolish can we be? Obviously, we're all here together, but we have Moshe Rabbeinu here. Is there anybody greater than Moshe Rabbeinu? And all eyes turn to Moshe Rabbeinu, and they say, you know, Tol Baruch, you should be the one to bench. After all, you are Moshe Rabbeinu. Lo kam b'Yisrael k'Moshe od. Sounds like a plan. The Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu turns to everybody assembled, and he says, Ani lo avarech. I cannot be the one to bench. There's something Moshe Rabbeinu shares with them, in which he feels that he is inferior. He feels he's in some way defective. He's incomplete. How so? Moshe Rabbeinu says, there's something lacking in my personality, as great as I may have been, as great as much as I have accomplished. Moshe Rabbeinu says, there's something lacking. And what is lacking? Lefi shelo zachisi likanes le'eretz Yisrael lo b'chayi v'lo b'mosi. Moshe Rabbeinu, as much as he accomplished, never had the great opportunity and the unbelievable gift of being in Eretz Yisrael, not while he was alive and not even after he died. As we know, Moshe Rabbeinu was instructed before the Jewish people go into Eretz Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him a gift that he let him look into the land. He was from Eber HaYarden. He was on the other side of the Jordan River, but he was allowed to look in. And then he passed away and he was buried there in Chutz Laretz. Moshe Rabbeinu says, there's something lacking in my personality, in the fact that I was never allowed entry into Eretz Yisrael, not while I was alive, and not after I died. What a fascinating comment. What an unbelievable statement for Moshe Rabbeinu to say. You can reach the apex of spirituality. You can be in the pinnacle of Nevuah. You can be the closest person to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and yet Moshe Rabbeinu himself confesses, there is something missing in my overall personality because I never had the gift of going into Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is not simply one of the Tariag Mitzvot, as we said last week. It is so fundamental. It is so significant. It is so central and important to what it is to be a Jew. And it makes a person more complete. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu says. It rounds out our personality. As much as we can accomplish here in Chutz Laretz, and there is what to do, it doesn't compare to a person who has the schus of living in Eretz Yisrael. There's an amazing comment made by the Sefer Charedim. The Sefer Charedim has nothing to do with being a Charedi. Sefer Charedim was a Sefer written in the 1500s, and he lived at the same time as Rabbi Yosef Karo, and Rabbi Chaim Vital, Rabbi Shlomo Alkibitz, all these different great Gedolim, Mekubalim. So the Sefer Charedim writes, when he talks about the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, he says, Tzarech kol ish Yisrael, lechaved es Eretz Yisrael. We have an obligation as Jews to admire, to praise, to savor the moment of being in Eretz Yisrael. That's what it's all about. V'lavo eilea me'afse Eretz b'tshuka gedola. And when you come to Eretz Yisrael, you have to come with a great yearning, with a great longing, with a fascination for the land of Eretz Yisrael. Kiven elcheik imo. I don't know if any of you have ever lost a child in a big department store. I've never had the great schus. I hope never to have that opportunity. I'm sure it's a harrowing feeling. I'm sure nobody is happy about it. But I'm sure it happens to some people. Obviously nobody in the room. But sometimes, once in a while, a child wanders off. and the mother or father is busy doing whatever they're doing, and they don't even notice, and by the time they find out, and then they hear over the loudspeaker, anybody recognize this child? You know, we're looking for the parents, and it's so humiliating, and it's so embarrassing, but obviously you'll do whatever you need to find your child, and they say, come to the security desk, and the child is screaming, and you hear them from down the aisles, and you're just mortified. You can't believe it, but you're happy that your child is safe. Finally, you find the child, and you embrace each other with such a warm hug and kiss. You're so excited to be reunited. That's what he writes, Kiven el chekimo. When a child is reunited with a parent that they couldn't find, that they lost contact with, that they were scared they would never see again, that is the overwhelming feeling that the Sefer Charedim writes we need to feel when we once again are allowed entry into Eretz Yisrael. Lavo eleh b'tshuka gedola, to come with that overwhelming sense of love and passion for what it means to be back in Eretz Yisrael. You want to know how our problem started in the beginning of times? Why is it that we're still here in Galus, writes the Sefer Charedim? How did this start? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu want us to suffer? What, he hates the Jewish people? Chas v'chalila. Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want us to be here in Galus? Says the Sefer Charedim, Ya'an ma'asnu bad. All started because we rejected, because we renounced, because we were disgusted by our connection with Eretz Yisrael. What happened in the days of the Meraglim? The Torah says, Vayimasu be'eretz chemda. You felt it was despicable to be in the land of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore he writes, Bipidyon nafsho mehero yiyeh. When we figure out how to overcome those negative feelings that we had so many thousands of years ago, when we come to a positive understanding of how lucky and blessed we are to have Eretz Yisrael in our lives as the focal point of our lives, it is only then that we will get out of this mess of galus, writes the Sefer Charedim. And therefore he says, this is why the Gemara tells us there were Amoraim who used to bend down on the floor and wipe the rocks. They didn't want dirt to be on the rocks of Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because they said it's such a beautiful place. The same way if I would mop the floors of my house, the same way I would go and fix something that broke in my house, if there was a doorknob that came off, I would fix it. Why? Because it's my house. So too, the Gemara says, the Amoraim would go around fixing things in Eretz Yisrael. They would go around polishing the floors, polishing the rocks. Why? Because Eretz Yisrael is not just another place to be. Eretz Yisrael is what we're all about. It's our home. It's where we belong. Why is it that Eretz Yisrael is so important? Is there some kind of magical experience that we have there? So to some people, yes, there is some kind of mystical, magical experience. But to most people, it is not that way. What is it about Eretz Yisrael that is significant? Why is it that Eretz Yisrael is so important? And this is something that the Gemara asks in Maseches Sota, where the Gemara wonders, why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu was so eager? Why was he aspiring so much to go into the land of Israel? What did he want there? He wanted to go floating on the Dead Sea? Is that what he wanted so badly? He wanted the falafel? What was so important to Moshe Rabbeinu? Why was he begging HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The Gemara says, Tav Kuf Tesvav Tfilos. 515 prayers were offered by Moshe Rabbeinu just for this thing. You know, you would think maybe somebody was going to die in his family. Okay, so you offer 500 tfilos. Even that is a little extreme. What is he offering 500 tfilos for? Only one time in his life he offered so many tfilos just to go into Eretz Yisrael. Why is it so important? So, the Ribbono Shel Olam said, you won't go in. Okay, so you won't go in. What's the problem? What is he lacking? What's he missing? The Gemara asked, Darash Rav Simloi, Mipnei ma nis'ave Moshe Rabbeinu likanes le'eretz Yisrael. Why was Moshe Rabbeinu so eager? Why was he so anxious to go into Eretz Yisrael? V'chi lecha mipiria hu tzarech. You think Moshe Rabbeinu had an appetite for the shawarma and the pizza and the lafa and the shawarmas and everything else? That's what he wanted, lecho mipiria, because he heard there's some great fruits and he heard that they grow all these exotic kinds of fruits there and they sell them in the Machne Yehuda Shuk. Really? That's what he wanted, says the Gemara. No. Lizba mituva utzarach. Did he hear that the paradise, it's just, you know, this amazing vacation spot? Is that really what he wanted? My sister told us yesterday, she's in Rehovot. She said, you know, summer is here. It's 106 degrees. I said, wow, 106 degrees yesterday in Rehovot. So, is that what Moshe Rabbeinu needed? The beautiful sun? He just needed to go out onto the beaches? Lachom Yipirio, Lizbal Mituva? No. Elakach Amar Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu's concern was the following. Harbe mitzvos nitzdavu Yisrael. We have 613 mitzvos that God commanded us to fulfill, to observe. And many of them, ein miskayim in ela be'eretz Yisrael. Trumas, Maisras, and other things we're going to outline in a few moments. There are a number of issues that can only be taken care of in Eretz Yisrael itself. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'm being robbed of the opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah. Can you believe it? Says Moshe Rabbeinu. God, you're not going to allow me. I don't care. I'll go into Eretz Yisrael. I won't eat a thing. All I want to be able to do is to be able to perform, to fulfill the mitzvah Hatluyos Baaretz. And Moshe Rabbeinu was not given that opportunity. And the Gemara teaches us here, this is the reason why we have to want to live in Eretz Yisrael. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has so many mitzvahs in the Torah that are central to being in Eretz Yisrael. We cannot fulfill them if we're outside. You know, sometimes we have a reason why we are unable to fulfill a mitzvah. We're considered an anus. Somebody is unable to perform a mitzvah for whatever reason. Something comes up. And it's an important thing. It's not an excuse. It's real. We don't have the opportunity. Person one day is dealing with the Chevra Kadisha. I'm not able to go to shul that day. What can I do? I have to take care of the burial. What am I supposed to do? What is my attitude supposed to be when I can't fulfill that mitzvah? What should I feel? What should I say? So Moshe Rabbeinu teaches us, as much as he may not have been obligated to fulfill that mitzvah, after all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself said, you're not going in. Okay, so what can I do? Throw up my hands. Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, but I feel terrible. I wish I would have the opportunity. The Shalah HaKadosh writes an amazing line. It's a take of a pasuk in Navi, where the Navi says, Ohev kesef lo yisba kesef. We've seen it. There are many people who have plenty of money, and the Navi says, as much as you love money, you'll never have enough. And the more you love it, you'll feel you just need more. And it's never sufficient. Ohev kesef lo yisba kesef. So the Shalah HaKadosh has a comment where he says, Ohev mitzvos lo yisba mitzvos. Person who is so in love with doing mitzvahs, with connecting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu through performing a mitzvah, will never feel they have enough. Moshe Rabbeinu, look what you've done in your life. Every moment of your life was spent in the proper way, connecting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and still you say it's not enough? Yes, the answer is it's never enough. If I have one more opportunity that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give me to fulfill a mitzvah, I'm going to run after, I'm going to do whatever I can, I'm going to petition HaKadosh Baruch Hu to allow me to do so. That is why we need Eretz Yisrael, says the Gemara, because Eretz Yisrael is something that avails us an opportunity to do more mitzvahs, to connect further and more deeply with HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. The pasuk says in Sefer Devarim, "Va'ata Yisrael, Shema el Chukim ve'el Mishpatim." HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "You are to adhere to all the Chukim and Mishpatim, all the laws of the Torah, Asher Anochi Mitzam Melamid Eschem La'asos, Leman Tichyu, in order that you should be able to live, Ubasem V'Yirishtem Es Ha'aretz, and you will be able to come into the land of Eretz Yisrael, Asher Hashem Elokei Avosechem Nosein Lachem." That HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you, the Chizkuni, one of the Gedolei HaRishonim in the 1200s, he lived in France, Chizkiyo ben Manoach. The Chizkuni asks, in his commentary on Chumash, what is the connection between these two halves of the sentence? In the beginning it says, listen to all the mitzvahs, all the chukim, the mishpatim, and then the end of the sentence is, the end of the pasuk, Ubasam yirishtem es haaretz, you'll come to the land of Eretz Yisrael. What does one have to do with the other? I can be a Jew who doesn't fulfill any mitzvah, and I can also come to the land of Eretz Yisrael. There are many Jews who live in Israel today who don't perform mitzvahs. So what does this mean? Writes the Chizkuni, Shalo Tomru, don't say, the Torah already assured us, Le'ela Techalek Ha'aretz. Lanu Nitna Ha'aretz, don't think this is a birthright. Don't think that this is your inheritance. Don't think you have any rights and privileges to the land of Eretz Yisrael just because HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised it to your forefathers, to your ancestors. That's not the way it works. Don't think it's Bein Zakah and Bein Chayav. Don't think that this is going to be a gift that will be waiting for you, whether you're deserving and worthy or not. No. Al Tomrukach. Shaharei Ein Knisaschem Be'eretz Teluya El Bischus Shetishmu El Achukim Be'el HaMishpatim. If you sign up, if you pledge to fulfill the mitzvahs HaTeluyas Be'eretz, if you agree to be a part of that experience, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says you have a right and a privilege to be in the land of Eretz Yisrael. And if you don't, it simply won't be yours. I'll take it away from you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. And that's why when this pasuk is formulated in Sefer Devarim, these two aspects of the point are put together. Number one, Shema el Achukim ve'el HaMishpatim. We need to make a firm commitment to Torah u'mitzvos, to the mitzvos hatluyos ba'aretz, to everything that entails. And then, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ubasem V'yirishtem es ha'aretz. What a Kiddush Hashem it is. Every time we have a Shemitah, every 7 years, and you see these farmers that are willing to go and put their entire trust, their emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they don't work the fields. Do you understand what it means? Would you ever leave your job for a year, unpaid, and assume that everything's just going to be there when you pick up the next year? It's a tremendous leap of faith. It's an unbelievable decision that they make. Yes, it's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks of them, but it's such a mesiras nefesh. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us is what makes us deserving of Eretz Yisrael. If you think about the second bracha in Berachas HaMazon, we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no delecha, thank you for giving us the Torah, thank you for giving us Eretz Yisrael. Well, what do those two things have to do with each other? The Yerushalmi says in Maseches Brachos, the answer is, when we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving us Eretz Yisrael, we also have to include Al Torah Shalimadetanu. What is Eretz Yisrael without a Torah? What is Eretz Yisrael without mitzvos? Nothing. It's Uganda. Yes, in 1948 there was discussion. Maybe we should go to Uganda, go to a different place. What's the difference? We just need a Jewish homeland. We need a place for the Jews to go. The answer is no. Eretz Yisrael is unique in the fact that it is the place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to fulfill the mitzvos HaTeluyos Ba'aretz. No delecha, we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our benching for giving us the land of Eretz Yisrael. But predicated on that is Al Taras HaShalimadetanu. If we did not have a Torah, Eretz Yisrael would not be significant either. There is nothing mystical, there's nothing majestic, there's nothing magical about Eretz Yisrael without that. Eretz Yisrael is something that's special because it is infused with so many mitzvahs. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, this is the commitment we all have to make when we come to think about a life with Eretz Yisrael. So, what about for those of us who are currently, and I say again, currently living in Chutz La'aretz? Right? Currently living in Chutz La'aretz. So the question is, we don't have the opportunity to fulfill mitzvahs HaTeluyos Ba'aretz. We're not there. So somebody emailed me last week, there's one easy answer. Yes, I understand. It's not as easy as it sounds. Moving to Eretz Yisrael is, I hope, the aspiration of every Jew in Chutz La'aretz, but it's not always so simple. There are many other factors. And I've been told many, many times by all of my rabbeim that Eretz Yisrael does not trump everything else. We don't assume that just because there's a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, therefore, it overrides Parnassa. We don't assume that it overrides Kibbutz Ava Ein. We don't assume that it overrides everything. These are major discussions in the poskim. Should we assume that Eretz Yisrael is the be-all and end-all, and even if that's at the expense of Chinuch HaBanim, if my children, again, I'm not saying they will or they won't, but if I as a parent believe that my children won't have the educational infrastructure that they are afforded somewhere else, does that mean I should give all of that up in order to be able to live in Eretz Yisrael? Maybe. But it's not so simple. If I don't think that I'm going to have a steady parnasa in Eretz Yisrael, does that mean I should just leave everything behind and just assume everything will be fine in Eretz Yisrael? Not so simple. It's not so clear. So all of these are cheshbonos. And the answer is not always, well, there's one easy way to solve the problem, and that is everyone should move to Eretz Yisrael. It's not so simple. But it certainly needs to be the aspiration of all of us. And we need to understand that even if we're here in Chutz La'aretz, it means we're living with an excuse. It might be a good excuse, but understand you're living a life with an excuse. The excuse might be Parnassa, the excuse might be Chinuch HaBanim, and all of those are legitimate. But you need to understand that all of those are excuses. And once the excuse is out of the way, we need to once again make sure that we recalculate, that we reevaluate whether our decision is correct for the time of life that we are then in. So this is a very important issue. But for those of us who are now so distant and so removed from this experience of living in Eretz Yisrael, the question is, do we have any chelek? Do we have any place? And Rav Kook addresses this in a very important essay that he writes, and he says, the answer for Bnei Chutz La'aretz is, im nis'or l'umlo b'shkida b'deya nechona. If we will spend time learning and discussing chelkei ha-Torah sha'al ha-Kodesh v'ha-Migdash nosdu, if we in Chutz La'aretz will spend time thinking about the mitzvahs ha-Teluyos Ba'aretz, every morning we say karbanos. I shouldn't say we. In the Siddur, there are a few pages that list the karbanos. Some people say that. It's there for a reason. Many of us are quite busy, taking care of many different things, so we probably don't all have a chance to do so. But the karbanos are there. Why are the karbanos there? Well, it's to remind us of what will be in the days of the Beis HaMikdash. We have to know what our obligations will be. Karban Chatas, Karban Shlamim, Karban Ola, Karban Toda. We need to know all of these because they are going to be relevant in our lifetime, we hope. So we need to know it. But more than that, says Rav Kook, and the Gemara says this, Uneshamu Parim Sefaseinu, if we don't have the opportunity to offer Karbanos, at least let's talk about it. At least let's consider it as if we're doing whatever we can to be well prepared and to think about these issues. Writes Rav Kook, for a Jew living in Chutz La'aretz, Yivi Einu Talmuda, Lidei Maisa. We hope that by our discussions, that will bring to a materialization, to an actualization of that experience of doing all the mitzvahs that Eretz Yisrael puts upon us. Ulu Umazeh, and in the opposite direction. Aleinu Lahavin, writes Rav Kook, we need to understand, Ki Miut Simas Alev, if we are indifferent, if we have a total neglect and disregard for the importance of the mitzvahs hatuluyos ba'aretz, v'hesach hadas mechelkei haTorah halalo, I'm going to say, look, what do I need to know about this for? I need to know about Shemitah. What's the big deal? Who cares about Shemitah? It's not relevant to me. Number one, it is relevant to you, because if you plan to be in Eretz Yisrael next year, it's a disaster every Shemitah, figuring out how you dispose of your garbage and what I'm allowed to throw into this garbage pail and that garbage pail, so you're all smiling, but it's not so simple. And which restaurant I'm allowed to eat in, and which supermarket I can shop in, and did they sell the land, and did they buy it, and is it from Arabs, is it Jewish owned? It's not simple at all. Even if you don't plan to be in Eretz Yisrael next year at all, which I hope you all do, but even if not, what about all the Totseret Eretz Yisrael that comes here into our country? So you have Jaffa oranges that are sold in Costco every so often. We need to think about that in general. Shumas, Maisris, all of these issues that are very, very relevant to us, that sometimes we don't even think about. But we need to be aware of them. We need to understand if there's going to be a bottle of wine that will be sold, is there a restriction on how to drink that bottle of wine if it's from Shemitah? Yes, there are. Yeah, we need to be aware of this. So we need to understand the halacha. We need to know and be well informed. So here says Rav Kook, aside from all of that, if we are going to simply neglect all of these aspects of Torah, even though they are relevant to us, Gorein ba'avoneinu richuk eis ha'yeshua, that will just prolong and extend this harrowing experience of Golus. The Chafetz Chaim gives a beautiful mashal when he says, Kedimyon ha'nisuin, says it's like a couple, Shekasher hakala omedes milubeshes umukushetes b'tach shiteha. It used to be, in the days of Chazal, in the days of the Gemara, they didn't prepare a wedding like we do. Now we have everything, you know, set from the outset. We know exactly what day they're going to get married, what place they're going to get married in. We know what time it's going to begin, how long the ceremony is going to be, who's going to speak and who's going to do this and who's going to play the music and what food we're going to serve. Everything is all planned out in advance. Every so often something doesn't go as planned and you have to make a modification. But generally we have everything planned out. In the days of Chazal, they said, okay, we're going to get married in around 12 months from now and we'll figure out the details. So at the time, you know, we talk now about a chuppas nida. Every so often you have the unfortunate experience that didn't work out properly, and a woman who comes to the wedding is not tahora. So it's very sad. I've been to such weddings. It's very unfortunate and sad. I know it mars some of the excitement of the day. But be it as it may, in the times of Chazal, that never happened. Why did it never happen? Okay, doesn't work out this week, so we'll push off the wedding till next week. What's the big deal? It's not like they invested so much in making sure that the wedding should be today. Okay, so the woman wasn't able to be tahora this week, so we'll push it off another couple of days. We'll figure it out. That's an issue that we deal with today because everything is so structured and everything is so perfectly made. Not everything in life is always so predictable. It doesn't always work that way. So you have to understand this is the way it is. But says the Chafetz Chaim, imagine the days of Chazal. You have a kala who's there with her makeup and her jewelry and her gown, and the food is all prepared, and everyone's gathered together in the shul, wherever they used to make the weddings. Everyone's there and waiting. And they go to the chassan, they show him a beautiful picture of his kala, and they say, look at her, look how beautiful. Do you not think he's going to rush out of his house that second and say, wow, you know, she's ready and everyone's here. Of course I'm going to come this minute. What is he going to wait another second? He's excited about this. Of course he wants to get married. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is described in Navi, Kimesos Chasan Al Kala Yasis Alayich Elokayich. We say it in the Chadodi every Shabbos. The way that a Chasan and Kala are so excited to dance with each other, to hug and embrace each other, to be so excited to be in each other's presence, that's the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks forward to embracing and celebrating with all of us Kimsos Chasan Al Kala. Says the Chafetz Chaim, the greatest way to convince the spouse that we're ready for that is by showing that we're ready. By showing him that we have all of our jewelry on and our makeup, showing him that we have our gowns ready and everyone's assembled. What greater way can we put ourselves out there and say we are prepared, we are excited, than by doing that, than by actually being prepared? Well, how can we be prepared? What is the metaphysical jewelry and the gown? How is it that we can do that? Well, the answer is, if we show our Kodesh Baruch Hu, yes, I understand what signing up to live in Eretz Yisrael means. I know that it means mitzvahs hatluyos baretz, and I actually know what those mitzvahs are. And I'm prepared to fulfill them. I know what karbanos is, and therefore I am excited for you to give me the opportunity to offer karbanos. If we don't know any of that, our Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to say, you want me to show up now? What's going to happen? I'm going to bring you all back to Eretz Yisrael. You have no idea how to live in Eretz Yisrael. I'm going to give you a Beis HaMikdash. You don't know the laws of Tumah Tahara. You don't know where you're allowed to go on the Har HaBayis and the Beis HaMikdash. Men, women, which side, which section. We don't know anything. So why should HaKadosh Baruch Hu come? Imagine one side, a bride or a groom shows up to the hall and there's no caterer. He said, go home. What are you going to do? Why should I stick around? We'll have to reschedule. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, don't make me reschedule. The best way to make sure that we don't have to make HaKadosh Baruch Hu reschedule this wedding is by ensuring that we are fully prepared, that we are adequately educated in all the different things that we need to be aware of. I just want to share, just to familiarize ourselves, obviously the halachos are so intricate with each of these, but just that we should hear the concepts, we should know what are some of the mitzvahs hatluyos ba'aretz. Again, I'm really not giving any details on any of them, but just to know what some of them are. So the Gemara tells us that many of them are connected to farms and to produce. So for example, the Psukim describe the mitzvah of leket. Leket means when I'm harvesting, when I'm collecting all of the produce, and I have to leave over 2 stalks for the aniyim. We have to look out for poor people. Not everybody has money to give to the poor people. Not everybody is such a philanthropist. Well, everybody who has a farm is able to give a little bit, a few stalks that are left behind. You have to leave it for the aniyim. The Gemara says shikha. Shikha means after I've bundled together all of my produce, and I have, let's say, all the wheat stalks together, so I leave behind one of them, one of the big bundles that I put together. If I left it there, I have to leave it for the aniyim. Don't go back and claim it again and bring it into your warehouse. Leave it outside for them. Heya. Heya means I have to leave aside a corner of the field and allow the aniyim to come and take from there. Peret. Peret is probably a mitzvah none of us have ever heard of. How many people in the room have heard of the mitzvah of peret? Or for that matter, ololos. Anybody know anything about this? No. These are words that aren't even familiar. Those are when I have a vineyard and I'm going to harvest the grapes, I have to also leave over a little bit. So it's a different word, but it's the same concept. We have a mitzvah of Shemitah, as we mentioned, every 7th year. Those who own land in Eretz Yisrael have an obligation to leave the land idle and fallow for an entire year, which is a tremendous Mesiras Nefesh, but that's the mitzvah of Shemitah. That only is applicable in Eretz Yisrael. We have a mitzvah of Maaser Ani, which means we have a 7-year cycle, as we said, Shemitah. So you have year 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 is an off year, and then you start again. So in the year 3 and 6, we have a mitzvah of Maaser Ani, which means we have to give 10% of all of our produce to somebody who is in need. So that's aside for the peyah and the leket and the shikha and all these other things that we leave behind in the field. We have to then go ahead in the 3rd and the 6th year and give 10% of whatever came from this field over to the aniyim. We have a mitzvah of bikurim. We know that we're coming up to Chag HaShavuos, which is referred to as Chag HaBikurim. Bikurim is the first fruits that grow. We have to bring to the Beis HaMikdash and we present them to the Kohanim. Netar Revai means the first couple of years that we grow a tree, we have an Isser of Arla, that we're not allowed to eat the first 3 years of produce that grow on a fruit tree. And then the 4th year, Netar Revai, means we have to take the fruits and we have to bring them to Yerushalayim, Hafrashas Chala. We're all familiar with the mitzvah of Hafrashas Chala, but believe it or not, this is something that is a mitzvah hatluyos ba'aretz. It's only midirabbanan and chutz la'aretz. We have patterned our mitzvah off the real mitzvah, but the mitzvah itself applies in Eretz Yisrael, not in chutz la'aretz. So we look forward to the day when once again we'll have that opportunity. Truma means all the produce that is grown, we have to take off a certain percentage and give it to the Kohanim. Maaser Rishon means after a Kohen gets his share, He has to give over a little bit to the Levim. Trumas Meiser, whatever, all of these complications. Meiser Sheni, the years 1, 2, 4, and 5 in the cycle of 7, you have to take some of the produce and bring it to Yerushalayim and eat it there. It's a complicated system. There's a lot that we need to be aware of, and I only mention all of this because we need to understand what it means to sign up to live in Eretz Yisrael. It's not all just fun and games and restaurants and pizza. It's a lot more than that. It's the mitzvah Sateluyis Ba'aretz, and this is what Moshe Rabbeinu so deeply wanted HaKadosh Baruch Hu to allow him to do, to go into Eretz Yisrael and have the opportunity to fulfill all of those mitzvahs that are only applicable in Eretz Yisrael itself. Now comes the interesting, fascinating, and very timely and relevant discussion that we raised in the beginning, and that is, for those of us living in Chutz La'aretz, let's say, by some terrible fate of the Jewish people, we still will not be in Eretz Yisrael by next year. We still will not be living in Eretz Yisrael for a year of Shemitah. Do we have any opportunity to partake in the mitzvah Sateluyis Ba'aretz? I'm living here in Woodmere. Here I am living my life. What connection do I have to a farmer in Eretz Yisrael? So again, I can send him money and I can help him, and that's wonderful. It's a nice thing to do, but I'm going beyond that. And supporting the farmers in Eretz Yisrael is extremely important. They need support. How are they going to live through the year next year? They all have families. They have to take care of them. So we have to do whatever we can to help them, and you have to choose carefully which organization you help them through. That's not for now either, but be it as it may, we understand that that's one aspect of help. But what if I want to participate myself? Would I have an opportunity? Would I have an opportunity to purchase a small piece of land from that farmer and tell him, you know, now this is my piece of land, and I want it to be considered as if I have observed the laws of Shemitah? Does that work? And as we mentioned, you're going to see all the advertisements coming in the next couple of weeks and months that are going to give you this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Which is not true, because 7 years ago they said the same thing. So it's once in a sabbatical cycle that we get the opportunity to do this. And the question is, does the opportunity even make sense? So we turn to a Gemara Maseches Nazir, Daf Yud Beis. Is it on here? No. So the Gemara Maseches Nazir has a very interesting concept. The Gemara talks about something that to us is like unfathomable. The Gemara says it used to be, sometimes people would be Mekadesh al Yedei Shaliach. Can you imagine you came under a chuppah today, and the Chasan and Kala, you know, Yaakov is marrying Leah, let's just say. And they're really excited. And it comes to the chuppah, and instead of Yaakov walking down the aisle, he sends his cousin, you know, whoever it is, sends his cousin down the aisle. Ooh, what do you mean, you're going to send your cousin? Like, your cousin's not the one getting married. Yeah, he's going to be my shliach. He'll give the ring to the young lady on my behalf. And he'll say that Hareyat Mekudeshes to my friend, to my cousin Yaakov, even though Yaakov wasn't able to make it, I'm sorry. But, you know, I don't want the wedding to be pushed off, and we would love for this to go ahead. He got stuck in traffic. He's not going to be able to make it. I mean, this would be the craziest thing ever. But the Gemara says this is what they used to do all the time. There was such a concept of Mekadesh al Yedei Shliach. Maybe the reason why is because back then people didn't travel as often, and they waited 12 months between the time that they actually got engaged by giving a ring and the actual Nisuin, when they moved in together into a home as one couple. So I don't know. They went on a few dates, and they, you know, whatever it was. And then you send the shliach with a ring, and you say, you know, I want a commitment. I want to make sure you understand that I'm committed to this relationship, and I'll see you in a year. I don't know. I don't understand how it worked, why it worked, but that's what they used to do. So the Gemara says, what happens if I send a shliach to Florida now? And I send the shliach to Florida, and I say, you know, I've gone out with this girl. She's so lovely. She's so wonderful. I want to marry her, but I can't go to Florida right now. I can't do the kiddushin. But I don't want to lose her. So I send my friend down to Florida, and I say, I want you to be mekadesh this woman. Okay, he's willing to do it for me. He's a good friend. Goes down, talks to the woman, negotiates with her. Here, take the ring. I want you to understand there's a commitment from my friend in New York. He's going to go ahead with this marriage. He just wants to make sure nobody else goes out with you. You're so beautiful. You're so wonderful. Make sure you save yourself for him. Now you are officially engaged to him. Okay? This lovely girl accepts because she loves me so much. Says, you know, I'm willing to overlook the fact that he hasn't come down to see me. That's okay. But I'm going to stick it out. I want to get married to him. Okay? What happens if I change the situation a little bit? I have my eyes, chas v'shalom, I have my eyes on a married woman in Florida. Well, that's an issa d'oraisa. I'm not allowed to put my eyes on a married woman and want to marry her. She's married to somebody else. She's not allowed to have two husbands. And I'm not allowed to be engaged in a relationship with her. But I have high hopes that her husband is going to no longer be her husband, somehow. Not that I'm going to do anything, but maybe he'll get sick, or maybe he'll divorce her, I don't know. And I'm hoping that I'll be able to be the one that's lucky enough to marry her. So, some crazy people out there think this way. So the Gemara says, look, I'm not going to... I hope this is not making anyone uncomfortable. It's just an interesting case. So the Gemara, in theory, is discussing the case. So the Gemara says, what if I send the shliach down to Florida and I say, go to that married woman, and the minute she becomes available, however that happens, either because she gets divorced or her husband passes away, whenever she becomes available, you give her the ring, because I don't want anyone else getting to her. She's so wonderful. She's so lovely. I want to be the one to marry her. Okay, you're out of your mind, because maybe it's never going to happen. But okay, this is what he does. Does that work? Am I able to appoint a proxy, a shaliach, to do something that, as things stand right now, would not be able to be done? If he would walk up to that married woman now with the ring and say, my friend wants to marry you, it wouldn't mean anything. It wouldn't work. She's married to somebody else. She can't accept a ring from another man and then be engaged to him. That doesn't work. Once a couple is married, they're together with each other, and the woman is not able to accept a kiddushin from somebody else. So if I appoint a shaliach, if I appoint a proxy at a time that I myself would not be able to do this activity, then perhaps the whole appointment of the shaliach doesn't make any sense and it would not work. So that's the fundamental principle that the Gemara says. If right now I myself would not be able to do it because of a technical difficulty in the way, this happens to be a big technical hurdle, she's married, it's a big problem, so therefore I'm not able to appoint a shaliach now to do it on my behalf. And that means even if he gets there and in a month from now she actually becomes available somehow, he's not working on my behalf. He wouldn't be able to go and give the ring that I appointed him to give, because at the time that I appointed him, it was an irrelevant discussion. So that's what the Gemara says. Take for another example. The Achronim discuss, let's say a couple has a young child, and they have to perform a Pidyon HaBen. Okay, wonderful. So Pidyon HaBen. Problem is, the father needs to go on a business trip. He's not going to be around for the Pidyon HaBen. So you should reschedule the trip. He's not able to reschedule the trip. He has to go, whatever it is. Whole business is on the line. Unfortunately, he's going to miss the simcha. So what does he do? He shouldn't do the mitzvah of pidyon haben. Of course he should. But how can he do that? He's not going to be here. So who's going to give the money to a kohen? So they discuss, maybe before he leaves on his trip, he should go to a good friend of his, give him the money, and say, when it becomes relevant, on the 31st day after the child is born, I want you to go to the kohen, and I want you to do the mitzvah of pidyon haben, because I'm not going to be here. So I put a shaliach in my place. I put a proxy in my place to do the mitzvah on my behalf. But right now, if I were to go to the kohen now on day 5 and say I want to be poda my son, it wouldn't work. Why? Because it has to be after the child is 31 days old. On the 31st day, the Yom Lamed Aleph. Which, by the way, if you ever make a pidyon haben, you better look at a calendar very carefully, because I've been to more than one pidyon haben where they made a mistake in the calculation. It's on Yom Lamed Aleph, after the child is 30 days old. So you have to just keep that in mind when scheduling such a thing. So anyway, the question here is, can I appoint a friend of mine on day 5 to do this mitzvah for me on day 31, if right now on day 5 I wouldn't be able to do it myself? It's the same question. How can I appoint someone to do something that I myself am not able to do? That's what the Gemara discusses. And that's where we come to this issue over here. The Plesi, which was written by Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz, he lived in the end of the 1600s into the first half of the 1700s. He was the Rav of Altoona, Hamburg, and Prague. He was one of the Gedolei Yisrael. So Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz writes about this trick. And he says, there are some people out there who gave us this great opportunity. Here I am living in Prague. Here I am living in Altoona or Hamburg. And I don't have a dream of going to Eretz Israel. How can I go? It was so dangerous at the time. There was no infrastructure to go. But there were a couple of Jews who lived in Eretz Israel. You know what? We have a great idea for you. Amazing opportunity. They took out ads in the newspaper in Prague and they said, anybody who wants to have the opportunity to observe Shemitah, we're going to give you a chance. You know how? Give us money. Give us money. Buy a small piece of our field. Then it will be considered like you're a farmer in Israel and you don't work the fields during this year. Great. You fulfill the mitzvah. Does that work? So he writes, I think it's the first time we hear about this idea is in the end of the 1600s. Let's read it together, number yud. Kama anshei maisa. Shenasnu lifnei chachamim, lifnei da'azlu de Eretz Yisrael. When there were great pious Jews who were going to Eretz Yisrael, their friends went to them and said, look, I unfortunately don't have the opportunity to live in Eretz Yisrael, but I'd like you to do this for me. Minu l'shluchim, liknos b'shvilam behemos. They made a shaliach, and they said, I want you in Eretz Yisrael to be my shaliach to fulfill the mitzvahs of Tzaliyas Baretz. Does that work? And he writes in the next line, Ani ha'isi mesupa kimahani. Does that really work? I myself don't have the opportunity to observe Shemitah because I live here. Does it help to send money over there to somebody who lives in another part of the world when I myself can't do it? Is that the same as the other case we gave? If I make a shaliach, hope this is not too complicated. It's good? Anyone need a clarification? Don't be embarrassed. So if I am unable to make a proxy, to make a shaliach, to go and get me engaged to this married woman, because right now she's married and I wouldn't be able to get myself engaged to her, so then maybe I can't make a shaliach to look over a property in Eretz Yisrael during Shemitah when I myself don't live there. I don't have an obligation. So that's the question. This is a very, very interesting question that is discussed in many achronim. Take for another example. They used to have, people would pay to do certain schusim in the Beis HaKnesses. So different things were done. So somebody paid for the entire year that they were going to do Hagba and Glila the whole year. Every time we take out the Sefer Torah, it's my schus. How much money you paid for that? I don't know. Hagba and Glila the whole year. So, I paid for Hagba and Glila the whole year. And then, unfortunately, the guy ends up in the hospital. So he's not here. So now who does it? So he sends us a message from the hospital and he says, you know, I have a good friend who sits a few benches away from me. I want him to be able to be the one to take my schus. Are you able to appoint a shaliach to do it on your behalf when you yourself are not even here to do it? You're not able to do it on your own. You're not here. You're in the hospital. So who says you have a right to give someone else the opportunity? Maybe you've lost your right. This is all part of the same discussion. And the Chachmas Adam, which is written by the Chai Adam, writes that he believes that we are able to participate in mitzvahs HaTeluyos Ba'aretz. And we would be able to go and buy a piece of land from the farmer in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because there's no real intrinsic barrier in the way. Any day of the week, if you chose to go to Eretz Yisrael and actually be living there, you would be able to do it. So he says, all it is richuk makom. All it is right now, nothing else has to happen. I just got to get on a plane and go. And then I'll be able to take my piece of land and feel as if I am the farmer myself. When we talk about the woman who is now mikudeshes to someone else, the woman who's married to another man, there's a major obstacle in the way. You can't just assume that that's going to take care of itself. And that's why I'm not able to do anything as things stand right now. But if I were to send money to Eretz Yisrael and buy a piece of land, and I want to be considered a farmer who lives in Eretz Yisrael, okay, so there's something you can do about that. You can buy the piece of land now. There's nothing really standing in your way to be considered a Ben Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, even though technically you're living in Chutz La'aretz, it shouldn't be a problem. That's what the Chai Adam writes. And this is something that is very, very widely discussed, especially now, the year before Shemitah, whether or not this is correct or not. Many years ago, I think it was two Shemitahs ago. It's not so many years ago. It's half of my life. So 14 years ago, I was in Eretz Yisrael. I was, I guess, 21, 35 now, so it makes sense. So at the time, I had asked Rav Asher Weiss about this issue. I thought it was interesting. It was the first time I ever heard of it. And I asked him what he thought. At the time, he wrote a tshuva to express his feelings of what he felt about this matter, and he was very opposed. He thinks that this whole thing makes no sense. And part of what he said is a halachic argument, where he thinks that just simply doesn't make sense. He says, if you want to contribute, let's say there's a chesed project going on in the community, right? So there's a bikur cholim that goes to visit people in the hospital. I happen not to be able to go and visit. Why? Because I'm in a wheelchair, and for me to get up and down the steps in the hospital, what am I going to do? Whatever it might be, I'm not able to go. So am I able to give money to the ones who are doing bikur cholim and say, go around and give out cakes and candies and sodas and whatever you're going to give out, all the unhealthy things that people in hospitals certainly shouldn't be having, but am I able to go and give money that somebody else should do it on my behalf? Of course. Why? Because I'm proactively being involved in something that is being done proactively. Make sense? I'm contributing to something that is actually going to be done. Rav Asher Weiss asked me, does it make sense to contribute to something that's not being done? We have a mitzvah on Shabbos of Shvisas Behemto. Shvisas Behemto means if I have animals, my animals are not allowed to do work on Shabbos. Not a dog or a cat. We're talking about, you know, farm animals. So if I have an ox, and the ox does work all week long, or the cow does work all week long, I'm not able to allow that animal to do work on Shabbos. Shvisas Behemto. Shai Schefter happens not to be a farmer. I don't live on a farm. I don't have animals. Does it make sense? Rav Asher Weiss asked me at the time, does it make sense for Shai Schefter to send money to the farmer in Pennsylvania? Oh, I want to buy a part of your cow. Why? This way, every Shabbos will be considered as if my Shai Schefter's cow is not doing work. Does that make sense? For Shai Schefter to send money to the hospital that they should go do Bikur Cholim because he can't make it is one thing. I'm giving money to contribute to something that's actually happening. But to give money to contribute to something that's not happening? What does that mean? What am I contributing to? So Rav Asher Weiss thought it didn't really make sense. And that's what he said. Maybe we should take out ads in the newspaper that everybody should give money to the local farmers who live out in the outskirts of town. And every Shabbos we should all send the money that this way we should be able to be partners with them in not doing work on their animals during Shabbos. Does that make sense? So I told it to my father at the time. I said, wow, you know, it's an interesting point. He said, I don't know, maybe it does make sense. It's an interesting idea. It sounds strange to us. It only sounds strange because we've never heard of it. If you would have told someone 500 years ago about buying a piece of land to do Shemitah, they also would have thought you're crazy. It's a new concept, a new idea. But then, Rav Asher Weiss made a point that I think is even more important than the halachic point, and that is al derech ha-hashkafa, and I think this is so critical. Let's look at this paragraph together. Amnam. Everybody has it? Amnam. Af im nomar diyesh mitzvah. Even if you want to say that technically it would work for me to send money and to become a partner in a land of Eretz Yisrael, be'etzem hayos lo karka be'eretz Yisrael shehu mashbis, if I technically own land and during Shemitah I'm not doing work on that land, mikam makom kvar amru chachamim, hakol lefi rov ha-maisa, rachmana li-babai. What does God want from us? What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want from us in life? So you'll see an ad in the newspaper every week. $5 here, a quick fix for this, this kameya and that thing. Is that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants? Is that really what the religion is all about? Rachmana li-babai, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants is our heart, is our mind, is our thoughtfulness, it's our understanding. Bizmanenu, he writes, Kulam rodfim achar mitzvas kalos. Everybody wants the quick fixes. Send $500 to this mekubel and your life will be perfect. We know it's not true. Even after you send the money, your life is still not perfect. All of this is baloney. It's all not true. Again, I'm not saying that these people aren't great people. Some of them maybe are, some of them aren't, but that's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. It's not the religion. The religion is to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and show him that your heart is in it. Not all of this. Send money to someone to go 40 days to Kevah Rachel for you. What is that? What is that? Why should I do that? Why don't you spend 40 days davening Shemona Esrei with Kavana instead of sending money to someone else to daven in Kevah Rachel for you? That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants. He wants our heart. He wants our sensitivity. V'shochachem, people forget. Ki ikar shleimus ha'adam udveikusa ba'akadosh baruch hu. Be'avodas avoda, avodas masa, ba'amida b'nisyonas hachayim. The way to develop a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is when we withstand challenges, when we overcome the impediments of life, when we are able to confront the difficulties that face us in life. Yes, it's hard for us to observe certain mitzvahs, but we do it anyway. it's not easy for us to do certain things, but we do it anyway. That is the way to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It doesn't mean that the life of a religious person is meant to be miserable. It's not what it means. We do it out of a sense of love, of Avas Hashem. Every mitzvah that we do is supposed to be done with a sense of simcha, with a sense of joy and appreciation for what the relationship means. But don't fool yourself. You think by sending $500 to the farmer in Eretz Yisrael in order to participate in the mitzvah, halavai, it would only be $500. They charge a lot more for this. But imagine, you think by sending $500, that's all the Ribono Shel Olam wants? Again, it's a nice thing, and maybe it works. But don't forget, even if you do that, don't forget, you cannot assume that once you send that check of $500, now you're free to do whatever you want. No. No, the Ribono Shel Olam wants so much more from us. And he writes, the Torah describes those who are Shomrei Shmita as Giborei Koach. It takes a tremendous sense of Gvura to be able to give up your parnasa for a year, not knowing what's going to be, not knowing how you're going to support your family, not knowing anything what's going to be in the future. That's a tremendous Gvura. Giborei Koach, the Torah refers to them as. You think you're called Giborei Koach in America? Here I am. Full-time job, getting a full-time salary, living in my house, living comfortably, having gourmet glatt down the block, beautiful shul, everything's wonderful. Oh, I'm such a giborik, I'm Shomri Shmita. Oh, what a sacrifice I made this year. Really? You think the Torah is referring to you? No, it's not referring to you. It's referring to the farmer in Eretz Yisrael who actually makes a tremendous sacrifice, who puts his entire life in jeopardy to listen to the mitzvahs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he says, if it were up to me, I would say, rather than buying a piece of land to consider yourself a partner in the mitzvah of Shemitah that way, give the money to the farmer who's doing the mitzvah the right way. Help support the person who's actually doing what he's supposed to be doing. That's the way to be helpful. That's the way to really tap into the mitzvah of Shemitah. And that, I feel, is such a beautiful perspective. Look at the last paragraph where he writes, Hine yadati sherabim yitmu alai. He says, I know many people are going to be uncomfortable with my position. What's wrong? We have chumras in all of life. We buy a beautiful lulav and esrog, and we buy a beautiful menorah, and we do all kinds of things in a really nice way. So what's the big deal? So you send a few $100 to Eretz Yisrael because you want to participate in the mitzvah. The same way we shouldn't come up with new kulos that we invent in our religion. In the same measure, it's inappropriate to come up with chumras that never existed, that our great-grandparents would never have imagined keeping. To come up with new things is not what the religion is all about. And this is his perspective. Again, it's one perspective. There are many other perspectives on this issue in particular. But I think it's a very interesting point to think about. As we familiarize ourselves very briefly with some of the mitzvahs of Tluyas Ba'aretz, and we have to start thinking about the mitzvah of Shemitah, Haba Aleinu L'Tova, that will come and give us the opportunity to participate in Eretz Yisrael, we should think about what our perspective as B'nai Chutz La'aretz is. How do we tap into all of this? What does it mean for all of us here, living in Chutz La'aretz? Is there anything we can do to be a part of all of these mitzvahs? Or perhaps are we considered to be outsiders in the experience of all of these mitzvahs that we described? So, Mirtz Hashem, maybe we'll continue next week. I don't know. We'll see what we're up to. But I wish everyone a wonderful day and a successful week.